Moving on to steps 8 and 9, page 76 of the big book. Now we need more action, without which we find that faith without works is dead. Let's look at steps 8 and 9. We have made a list of all persons we have harmed and whom we're willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory. That's known in the sales world as bait and switch. If I had any idea I would have to make amends to all the people I put on my resentment list, my list would have been shorter, no doubt. Now, it's interesting because, you know, your sponsor comes up to you and you got your 8-step list and he says, are you willing to make amends to all these people? Are you willing to set right these wrongs? Remember, in the beginning, it was agreed you'd go to any length for victory over alcohol. And I know the right answer. And I tell my sponsor, yes, I am willing to make amends to all these people, but I am lying. In reality, I have 3 separate lists in my mind. Now, I have lists that he made me make out. He had me make out a list of family members, all the financial institutions I owed money to, all the businesses that I had stolen from, all the women I had been in relationships with. So I had these separate lists, but the 3 lists I'm talking about, I got one list that I'm willing to make amends to those people right now. And those are usually family members that have kind of watched me get sober. I know they kind of approve of what I'm doing. I'm thinking it's not going to be smooth, but it's not going to be bad. You know, I think it's going to go okay. And then I got another list of people. I'm not sure if I'm going to make amends to them. I'm kind of on the fence. I don't know if it's going to go well. There's a little apprehension about it. I think maybe one day, perhaps, kind of, maybe, somehow, I'll make amends to them. But not today. We're not doing that today. I'm not ready. And then I have the 3rd list. And those are the people I'm never going to make amends to. Now, I may tell my sponsor I'm going to make amends, but I know in my heart of hearts, this is never going to happen. I'm never going to be in front of those people. There's too much fear. It's going to go too bad. You can't make amends to a drug dealer, for God's sakes. You know, you can't. How am I going to make amends to the IRS? I owe them $80,000. I'm making minimum wage with taxes taken out. Who are you kidding? You know, that's easy for you to say. You know, it's why your sponsor can tell you to go to court and clean up your records. He's not going to jail. I mean, it's that kind of thoughts that I have going on. But what happens to me is I start making amends, and something very unusual happens. Those first amends that I make that I'm pretty sure they're going to go okay, not only do they go okay, they go better than I thought. In fact, some wonderful things happen in those first amends. And what happens in this second set of amends, the ones I'm not sure I'm going to make, now I start to think I'm pretty sure I'm going to be able to do those too. Because I'm kind of wrong about how things are turning out in the amends process, and I'm feeling better. And that third set of amends, the ones I'm never going to make, I start to become open-minded, which is really what we talk about in the 8th step. It says, if I'm not willing to make those amends, I pray until it comes. But I couple that prayer with action. You see, why I'm praying for God to give me the willingness to make amends to people that I know in my heart of hearts I'm never going to do, I get into action on the amends that I can make. And the results of the actions I'm taking in the amends process in step 9 is changing my heart and my mind more seemingly than the prayer is. That God is working through the people that I'm making amends to change my mind. And I find out we're all connected because things are happening in a spiritual nature I can't explain. You know, there's a word used in 2 different places in the big book in the amends process. I think it's the most important word to keep in mind with the amends. And the word is demonstration. Used in 2 different places. In the second place, it says it doesn't matter if a man throws us out of his office. It's water over the dam. We've made our spiritual demonstration. But more importantly, there's a place where it says our man would be more interested in our demonstration of goodwill than our talk of spiritual discoveries. That's on page 77. And why I think that's so important, you know, most people would rather see a sunset than listen to a sermon. You know, all my life I've been telling people how sorry I am, but they already know it. On page 82 on the bottom, it says, an alcoholic is like a tornado roaring his way through the lives of others. Hearts are broken, sweet relationships are dead, affections have been uprooted. Selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. We feel a man is unthinking when he says that sobriety is enough. He is like the farmer who came out of his cyclone cellar to find his home ruined. To his wife, he remarked, don't see anything of the matter here, Ma. Ain't it grand the wind stopped blowing? Yes, there is a long period of reconstruction ahead, and we must take the lead. A remorseful mumbling that we are sorry won't fill the bill at all. The apology is part of the amends. It's the smallest part of the amends. It's a politeness. It's a nicety. But that's not what an amends is about. An amends is about what am I going to change? What am I going to fix? What am I going to change or what am I going to fix in that relationship or that situation? What is going to be my demonstration of goodwill? I learned that from my first sponsor before I even formally got to the amends. I was no more than 4 months sober. My sponsor came up to me and he said, listen, what are you doing in that house where you're getting sober to say thank you to your family for letting them, for you getting sober there. And I said to him, I go, well, I'm not drinking. And he said, that's mighty big of you. He said, I'd like you to go home tonight and ask your sister if there's anything you can do to say thank you. And so I went home to my sister and I said, well, my sponsor wants to know if there's anything I can do to say thank you for you allowing me to get sober in your home. She didn't miss a beat. She said, well, you can paint my house. And I said, your whole house? And she said, yeah. And I said, I got to go talk to my sponsor about this. And I went back to my sponsor and I said, this crazy woman wants me to paint her 3,800 square foot, two-story house. And he said, is she buying the paint? And I said, well, I assume. And he goes, ah, you got off easy, paint her house. And he walked away. And he always used to do this. He'd end our conversations by being real dismissive, saying something and walking away. Ah, paint her house. And I watch his bald head going away. And I yell at the back of his bald head. I said, hey, I thought this program was suggested. That was a mistake, I was to find out. Because I didn't know he could move like that. You know what I mean? Like, he was back in my personal space before I realized it. He's looking up at me, and I'm looking down on him, and he's pointing that finger up at me, and he says, Don, you're so sick that anything that comes out of my mouth from this point forward, I want you to assume it's a direction. And we'll let you know when you've passed into the suggestion phase of the program. So I'm painting her house. And what I didn't know about my sponsor is, you know, my sponsor was a student of the Big Book, and I was talking to him about my sister and our relationship and how she was my favorite person on the planet. And because I had treated her so poorly and broke her heart so many times over the years, that although I was sober and going to Alcoholics Anonymous, there was something between us. There was a wall between us. It was hard for us to be in the same room at the same time for any real length of time. We couldn't really talk in an open manner. There was something in the room at all times that was kind of cutting us off from each other. And I felt terrible about that. I felt awkward around her. I felt embarrassed around her. I felt shameful around her. And it was cutting me off from her. And my sponsor understood that that demonstration of goodwill was going to be exactly what was needed in that situation. You know, it would have been easy for me to go to my sister and say, hey, you know what, I'm sorry I stole your car and stole your dough and broke your heart, but I'm an AA and I found God, we're all good, right? But my sponsor knew what the men's were really about. And I'll never know for sure what it did for my sister by me painting her house. I mean, I know she said it caused a great healing in her life, but I know what it did for me. It seemed like the longer I was into that project, that awkwardness, that uncomfortability I had around my sister, it just diminished just a little bit. And it's not like when I was done with it that we were all even Steven. No, there was a long period of reconstruction ahead, like the Big Book says. But you know what? I could be in the same room at the same time with my sister, breathing the same air. And Alcoholics Anonymous and the amends process in particular gave me back probably one of my favorite human beings on the planet, gave me my relationship with my sister back. And when we talked about it years later, she said, I couldn't believe you were painting my house. I know who you are, and that wasn't you. And not only did you do it, you did it with a pretty good attitude. And I watched you and I said, something's happened to him and I don't understand what it is, but I liked it because I was getting my house painted. And she goes, and I realized that this thing called Alcoholics Anonymous was actually showing up in your life. She goes, I saw you doing things I never thought you were capable of before. And so I started to be healed by the action suggested in Alcoholics Anonymous. My family started to be healed by that demonstration of goodwill, not sweet promises, not I'm so sorry, not it's going to be different in the future. Now it's going to, I showed them with my actions that I was sorry. I showed them with my actions I wanted to make it right. My sponsor instructed me on how I was going to make amends with everybody. He had a very specific format. He said, you will make an appointment with everybody you're going to see. We are not going to ambush anyone. He said, Don, we are handcuffed. I said, what are we handcuffed by? He said, your perception of reality. He goes, if you drank as much whiskey as you say you did, who knows what really happened? And that's true. Even to this day, I have this problem. I mean, it's a character defect of sorts. Because of the work I've done in AA and the steps, I understand that occasionally I hurt other people. But when I hurt other people and realize I've done it, I almost instantaneously know how bad I hurt you, how pissed off you should be, what it should take for you to get over it, and how long that should take. And I don't need to talk to you about it. I just know. And I'm always wrong. And I first learned about that in the amends process. He said, you will call them up and you will make an appointment and you will tell them why you are coming. You are saying, you will tell them you become a member of Alcoholics Anonymous and part of what you have to do is make restitution for people you feel like you've harmed and you feel that you've harmed them. And you would like to have come have a conversation about that with them. And you have to ask something of them and you tell them if they are brave enough and courageous enough, and although you don't have the right to ask, if they would be willing to tell you how your behavior has affected them and what they think would be required for you to make that right, you would really appreciate that. And I told my sponsor, I said, this is a bad idea. And the reason he did that is he didn't want me to be the ambush. He didn't want me the guy that calls up his Aunt Sally and goes, hey, Aunt Sally, how's it going? Oh, Donald, how are you? Still going to the A&A? Well, I sure am, Aunt Sally. Hey, Aunt Sally, can I come over and see you? Oh, what would that be about? Well, what, I can't come see my favorite aunt? And I show up at my Aunt Sally's and I lay this heavy-handed amends on her. And at the end of the amends, I say to her, Aunt Sally, would you be kind enough to tell me how my behavior has affected you and what I could do to make this right? Aunt Sally didn't know I was coming. Aunt Sally doesn't know anything about AA. Aunt Sally doesn't know how important it is that I get the truth. And what does Aunt Sally say? She's seeing me sober for the first time, and I don't know, forever. You think she's really going to tell me how I've affected her? What I really have to do to make it right? Or is she going to say something like this? Oh, baby. Baby, baby, baby. We've always just loved you and wanted good things for you. You don't have to worry about that money you owe me. You don't have to worry about all those things. You know what? You just stay sober. That's all we really want from you. You want to make it right? That's how you can make it right. You just stay sober and you have a good life. And I think to myself, self-centered, grandiose alcoholic, whoo, that was close. And I don't understand. I just screwed myself out of the biggest gift that you can ever get around here, and that's the truth. Because I'm not going to get to the truth without the participation of the people that I've damaged. Because I'm only armed with my perception of reality. I don't know how I've hurt them. I sat down with my sister to make amends. And I talked about stealing their car and stealing their money and missing the graduations and missing the celebrations and missing the high holidays and not being an absentee craphead brother. And I got done and I asked how my behavior had affected her. She goes, you think this is how you hurt me? And I said, yeah, that's my perception of it. And she said, you are wrong. She said, you don't know what it's like. You don't know what it's like to love somebody as much as I love you. When I ask you how you're doing, you say couldn't be better, and I'm watching you die by inches. You don't know what it's like. You don't know what it's like when the phone rings in my house and it's after 10 o'clock at night. I know it's them calling me to tell me I'm never going to see my baby brother again. That always gets me. You don't know what it's like. And I didn't know what it was like to love an alcoholic. You know, I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm singing a very old familiar song. The only person I hurt was myself. And I go into the amends process, eyeball to eyeball, shoulder to shoulder, chest to chest with these people I've damaged. And I gave them the dignity and respect that Alcoholics Anonymous requires of me as a recovering alcoholic to hear their side of the story and to find out how I had damaged people and to find out what I had to do to make it right and to understand there was a long period of reconstruction ahead. I remember going to my mother and making amends, and I had been a terrible son to my mother. And I owed her a great deal of money, and I was hung up on all the money I owed her, and I'm talking about the things I felt I had done wrong, and we got to the part where I wanted to hear from her, and she told me a story I'd completely forgotten. And a few years before I got sober, my mother lives in Lexington, Kentucky, and she's not a woman of means, right? And word had gotten back to her that her baby boy was drinking himself to death. My sister had called her and said, listen, if you want to see Donald, I'd do it quickly because I don't know if he's going to be around much longer. And it scared the hell out of my mom. And my mom called me up and put a plan together. And she said, why don't you come see me at Christmas? You know, we haven't seen each other in a while. And I love Lexington at Christmas time. They really do the town up. It's just beautiful. It'd be my treat. I'll buy the ticket and everything. And I'm so self-centered. When my mother offered a grown man and she's going to pay for me to come to Lexington, I thought to myself, I'd do her a favor. Throw the old girl a thrill. Go out there on Christmas. And I said, yep, I'll come out. And you know, I meant to go. I really did. But you know, the night before the flight, I went to the bar and wouldn't you know it, I fell in love. And I woke up the next morning laying there naked next to a stranger and I look at the clock and I've missed the plane. And you know what you do when you're a real man? You pick up the phone, you take the heat, you say you're sorry, I missed a plane, I don't know what to tell you, I'm a screw-up. But you know, that might make me feel bad, and I don't want to feel bad. So I just took another pull off the jug, and I went back to sleep. And now you turn the camera to Lexington, Kentucky, and this woman wakes up in her little humble home, you know, and she's excited. And it's kind of that winter weather they get in Lexington. It's kind of sleeting outside. It's cold outside. But my mother said to her it was a beautiful spring day because her heart was full because she was going to see her baby boy. And she knew he was in trouble, and she knew he was in trouble with the drink, but she thought, if I can get him in front of me, I could talk some sense into him, I could love him, you know, and maybe we can come up with a solution for this. And she got in that old car she owned, and she drove down to Lexington Airport on those icy streets, and she said she didn't even notice the weather, how bad it was. She said, my heart was beating like a little bird, I was so excited. And it was back in the days before 9/11, and she parked the car, and she walked out in the tarmac, she's clutching her umbrella, and she watches my plane come in. And she's so excited, and she's watching people get off the plane. No, that's not him. He's not tall enough. No, that's not him. And finally, all the passengers are off, and the flight crew's off. And finally, the pilot and the co-pilot are walking by my mother. My mother grabs the pilot and goes, you know, there must be some mistake. My son is on that plane. I haven't seen him come off yet. And he says, lady, I don't know what to tell you. Maybe he missed the flight. There's nobody left on that plane. And my mother said it was at that moment she noticed the weather for the first time. And she felt the cold on her face. And she said she walked back to her car and she was so shaky she couldn't drive. She just put her head down. She cried for a half an hour straight. And she said, I knew I'd lost you to the drink and I knew you were going to die. And I knew there was nothing I could do for you. And I came to Alcoholics Anonymous singing an old familiar song that the only person I hurt was myself. And I'm so grateful for the amends process that I gave people, the respect and dignity that the program requires out of a recovering alcoholic to hear their side of the story and let them talk to me about how I really damaged them. Because I came out of those family amends and I didn't know much, but I knew this. I never want to be that guy again. I never want to look at my mother and see tears in her eyes and know they're of sorrow rather than joy. And because of Alcoholics Anonymous, I've been able to make these family amends, be an active member in my family's dynamic for all these years because of good sponsorship and what you guys have given me. My mother wants you to know that she doesn't cry herself to sleep at night anymore, that she loves Alcoholics Anonymous and she loves what it's done for her baby boy, and she thanks you from the bottom of her heart. I owed my mother a great deal of money. I didn't know how much I owed her. I said, how about if I send you $100 a month for life? And she said, beautiful. And I remember I sent that first check off, and a couple weeks later, I get a call from my mom, and my mom's hysterical on the phone. She's crying, and she's blithering. And I said, Mom, what's going on? She's, oh, Mom, put it together. Use your words. What are you trying to tell me? And she finally catches her breath, and she says, when did you get a checking account? Give you an idea of the kind of loser I am. Our big book says, most alcoholics owe money. We do not dodge our creditors. Bad news. Bad news. Like Sheldon says, Dave Satan 9, they're expensive. I remember owing the IRS $80,000. I made a lot of small financial amends, but I knew I'd never be able to make that one. And I was about 2 years sober, and I started waking up in dread and fear of being caught by the IRS because I knew they'd catch it. And what am I going to tell them? 2 years sober in Alcoholics Anonymous when they catch me. What am I going to say? Oh, I was just about to call you. You know what I mean? And one day, the fear of being broke was less than the fear of the IRS. And I decided I'd rather be broke the rest of my life than not face the heat. And I called the IRS, and they answered the phone in those days, Internal Revenue Service, and I hung up on them. You know what I mean? And I called them right back, and I found out that God's kids work at the IRS. I entered into a payment agreement to send them $100 a month. I remember sending that first check off and thinking to myself, oh, good, $79,900 to go. Funny thing happened, man, and we agnostics, we read that God's everything or else he's nothing. What was our choice to be? The minute I started paying back the IRS, funny thing happened. I started getting better jobs. I started making more money. Now, I didn't have any more money. As my sponsor explained to me, oh, don't worry about it, kid. They don't want your money. Oh, they don't? No, they want their money. So I just made more of their money to pay them back. And you know, I remember, too, man, I was finally making some good money, and I had 1 month where I paid all my amends. We were saving for a wedding, Eileen and I, and we had made all our financial amends that month, and there was a surplus. I hadn't had a surplus in 5 years. I've been living hand to mouth for 5 years. And it wasn't, you know, wasn't a ton of money, but to me it was a fortune, right? It was $3,000. And I couldn't believe it. I didn't know what I was going to buy first. And I went to my wife-to-be and I said, I had this $3,000 surplus. Isn't this great? Maybe I'll get golf clubs. Maybe I'll buy a big screen TV. Maybe I'll take a trip. And my wife-to-be says to me, well, you should probably send it to the IRS. And I started yelling there, 5 minutes. You can't let me be happy for 5 minutes, you know. And I'm not going to send the money off. But I call my sponsor because that's what we do. And my sponsor goes, I'm not going to tell you you have to send it to him. I'm just going to tell you you probably should. So now I can't talk to him because he's an idiot. And I don't send the money off to the IRS. I just leave it in my checking account where it mocks me for about 4 weeks. Finally, I can't take the pain anymore because I just know I got to do the right thing. And I bitterly write this check to the IRS, Internal Revenue Service, $3,000, and just bitter. And I mail it off, and I wait for the spiritual gift. You know what I mean? I know I'm going to feel better any minute. And I feel worse. A week goes by and I feel really bad. And I now I really regret sending the money. And now I'm pissed at my sponsor. I'm pissed at my wife. I call my sponsor up and I go, hey, man, I just sent that money to the IRS. He goes, I know. And I go, when am I going to feel better about this? He goes, I don't know, Don, someday. I'm thinking, he's got no answer. So you fast forward a couple of years. Eileen and I are in escrow in our first house. Couple of loser drunks. They gave us a loan. We couldn't believe it. And we're getting down to the finish line. And Eileen's afraid we'll get tripped up. She goes, you should call the IRS, find out what your balance is. You know, we don't want to get tripped up at the finish line. By this time, I have a direct line to my own agent, right? This guy named Bill. So I call Bill up and I go, Bill, it's Don. He goes, Don, how are you? I go, great, Bill. How are the kids? Oh, growing like weeds. Thanks for asking. What do you need, Don? And I said, well, you know what, Bill? I'm just checking on my balance. He goes, okie dokie. And he puts me on hold. He comes back and he says, Don, it's the funniest thing. You know, you've actually overpaid by $400. Would you like us to send you a check? Let me tell you, if you send every spare nickel that you owed or that you had to the IRS for about 5 years straight, your answer sounds a little bit like this. You bet your ass. And I called my sponsor up and I said, remember when you told me one day I'd feel better about that money I owed the IRS? He goes, yeah. I go, today's the day. And the truth is, some of these amends, when are we going to feel better about them? When they're complete. When they're complete. So anyway, that's all I got for right now. I'm going to turn it over to my friend, Sheldon.